is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. Gotcha, you lead us, gotcha, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
Welcome to the 110th episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, the first one with the year 2020. And as every year, people want to spend their time differently in the new year. But unfortunately for me, myself, Stuart Court is spending my time in the same way I spent far too much of the 2019 calendar year too. Speaking to Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
Well, don't do me any favours, mate. What a shot straight off the bat, that one. Bloody hell.
I'll have to bring you down a peg or two.
A peg or two? That's a fucking shelf.
How are we, sir?
Well, I was doing really well. And then, no, it's fine. Don't worry about me. No, I'm well. And yourself?
I'm not too shabby. This week we'll look back on week 17 and how the Seahawks fell inches short of quite miraculous in the context of some parts of that game on Sunday night, NFC West title, and then look ahead to their path to Miami at the first weekend of Feb and how likely, unlikely, and god-awful it could actually turn out to be. But we'll start off, Adam. Sunday night football, it looked like we were going to be in bed by half two, and then as Seahawks do, we were heart palpitations at 4 a.m.
They just are the strangest of strange teams, aren't they? You almost get to a point where, like, right, you start the game, I'm going to enjoy it, it's going to be fun. 15 minutes in, you're just thinking, what am I even doing with my life bothering with this absolute rabble? And then the game ends and you just think, God, I love them and they're so annoying. And it just, I don't even know what to say anymore, because every game is kind of taking the same path and it's like, thank you, sir, can I have another? It's just like asking to be punched in the face in but then sometimes it could be enjoyable, and I don't know, it's just I don't think you could explain how this season has gone coherently without just coming across like a complete lunatic, because it's just been an emotional roller coaster like I don't think we've seen for a while.
Yeah, it, you can explain to someone, they go, what, and you still watch?
That's very true.
And you still, but as I think I tweeted at some point towards the end of the game, that I hate this effing team, and it's pretty much that. It's because there's clearly a recipe for success, because it happens every week where we make it a 1 point, one score game and all the rest of it. But it's just like, if it's there, use it earlier kind of thing. And they just seem, I don't know, it was. I think Sunday is the most extreme, because that literally could have been 24-27-0 before the Seahawks even mustered the first down, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think for as much as people want to do the whole can you win it in the first, second or third thing, like, it, you know, they nearly like just blew us apart early on. Yeah. I don't really know how they managed to stop it. I think there were a couple of field goals, a couple of good stops, that it was only 13-0 at one point, when really it could easily have been in the 20s before the first quarter was even up. It looked like, I think I tweeted out, this is when people say, what would happen if LSU play against the Bengals? Like, that's what it was starting to look like. We couldn't do anything and they were doing everything they wanted to at will. Yeah. And it was strange that they managed to wrestle back some kind of control on the game, because it looked like it was going to go very ugly for a while.
But like, even then, I'm not even sure how they did, because when the Robbie Gould kicked two field goals either side of the Deebo Samuel 30-yard rush, made 13-0. But those field goals were 47, 30 yards, so they made it deep, well, relatively deep into Seahawks territory. But every other score they had, most 2-yard rush, most 13-yard rush. I mean, they were just. I just don't understand what happened. But because the offense obviously clicked, because they put, 21 points up in the last, in the second half. So something clearly clicked, but it wasn't as palpably obvious as it's been in the past, even as it was back in 2013, 2014, when we were, 10-3 down at halftime against the same team and come roaring back. It's actually like prime examples of what they did and how they did it, kind of thing, of how they got back into that game. But Sunday, there isn't really much to go off. I mean, Wilson, yeah, started throwing the ball a bit deeper, all the talk up, going a bit up tempo, but there's no real clear examples that I can think of to point towards how this, how they kept it and how it only came down to Jacob Hollister on the half inch line, Adam.
The only thing I can think of just off the top of my head was like the maybe like the first KJ Wright smack on Matt Breida. Yeah. Like it was the kind of moment where it was like we realized that we are also a professional football team and we're allowed to do that to them. And yeah. I don't know, it was almost like the knock that Breida got kind of reverberated down to our sideline and made them all realize that they're also allowed to play. I mean, because the thing is, as brilliant as the Niners are, and I do think they are fantastic, they're not kind of like the team like the Saints you would fear that could shred us for 50 or 60 points if they just turned it on. Like, they're not that kind of team. Really, what they do is kind of what we're not too bad at ourselves. So it was weird that there was such an outclassing early on. And yeah, it just felt like that hit was a reminder that we're also a good team and we can play as well. And I think he followed up with one on George Kittle not too far afterwards. I thought, you know, I know people don't like to talk about momentum as it's unquantifiable in sport, but I thought if ever there was a moment where you could think that maybe not momentum strictly, but like something that changed something, that for me seemed quite a seminal moment in the game.
Yeah, and also it juiced the crowd as more, because obviously 13-0 down, the offense had like minus 6 yards at that point as well. It definitely brought the crowd back into it. And no matter what, the win loss record may be for the 2019 Seahawks at CenturyLink, the crowd effect in a primetime game like that is, I mean, we've been there for one of them as well a few years ago. But everything just points that just none of it makes sense. The Seahawks are 27 first downs to 18 for the Niners. They held the ball for over 5 minutes more. They had 5 penalties to San Francisco's 8, and neither team turned the ball over. It's just, as you said, another weird game. But for the Seahawks on the offense, obviously Marshawn Lynch was the main talking point, the main focus of all the pregame ceremonies and the pregame chat with Collinsworth and Michaels on the commentary as well. And it, I mean, I think pretty much majority of Seahawks fandom has said that his touchdown on Sunday night is, with that, and it's not even close for myself, is the best moment of this 2019 season, because it was just really fucking cool, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's all it was. It was, you know, there's been the chat in the stats community that his, you know, EPA and what he did was, you know, you could argue he shouldn't have played and the Seahawks may have won without him. But I just think that's such a reductive way to look at how sports work and the juice that he gave them. And, you know, his presence there, we've all seen the video of him and Travis Homer explaining how good he is. Stuff like that is immeasurable. And yeah, I mean, maybe it is to the point where I'm over-relying on stuff that doesn't really matter. But I feel like I know sports well enough to know that stuff like that can make a massive difference to a team. And I don't know, just having him there, it just felt different. And once they'd worked out that maybe it wasn't the idea to, you know, try and just run through the middle and go to more of some of the power run sets. He had two really good runs in the second half, and it was just slightly outside the middle as opposed to trying to go straight through kind of the center of the line. So maybe they'll learn something like that. And, you know, you'd certainly rather have him than not, based on what you saw on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, there's also a pretty fair argument for the reason that the Niners have spent most of their first-round picks since Marshawn Lynch has been in Seattle. Most of those first-round picks have been on that defensive line, that front seven. Obviously, the entire front four, I think, on Sunday were all high first-round picks, and that's because they got gashed by Marshawn Lynch repeatedly for 4 or 5 years his first time around here. So the fact, one, it didn't really work that much is not surprising when you put that and also in the mix of a 33-year-old playing his first game in nearly 16 months. But the other guy you mentioned there, Adam, Travis Homer, 10 carries, 62 he was more the outside Rashad Penny type, wasn't he? And he kind of flashed and he added weight to that conversation and groundswell that if you can slot running backs, paying running backs is a bit silly because you can just slot any guy in, and that includes a late round college backup running back in Travis Homer, who looked impressive once the team got going. He kind of got going as well, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, like, he can't do what Chris Carson did.
No.
And so, you wouldn't want to say, if someone's offered you now, you'll lose Carson, but Homer's going to be your number one. You wouldn't say that. But he certainly did the Penny job really well. And there was that nice little pitch play from Wilson's left hand to Homer. He held onto the ball really well. I just, you feel with a sixth round rookie that, oh God, I hope he doesn't fumble and ruin everything that he's done so well so far. But I thought he was really good and certainly looked a lot more competent than someone like a Prosize did in the last couple of games that he was playing. Like I felt much more confident that Homer had the foggiest idea what he was doing with the ball, as opposed to Prosize that was just kind of full YOLO at all times.
I was
impressed as you could hope to be with him. And if you look at how well Penny did against the Eagles in week whatever it was, you would imagine that he could stand to feature quite well on Sunday again.
Yeah, well, when we talk about Homer, dismissing Homer as a sixth round pick, Chris Carson was a seventh round pick. So it doesn't always, but I think that's the biggest thing for me with Homer is that, I mean, Pete Carroll mentioned him about 5-6 weeks ago in one of his press conferences of the rookies that were impressing him, not Marquise Blair or Cody Barton or DK Metcalf. It was Travis Homer, the one he pinpointed. So the fact it took 5.5 weeks and everyone else to die in front of him, it's somewhat, that's more annoying than any other coaching decision that Pete Carroll's probably made this year. Because we're seeing it with Marquise Blair. When he's on the field, he's laying the hits, he's making an impact, but he's still behind Leno Hill, who's, I'm not too sure what was going on there. But I think the biggest thing with Homer is that CJ Prosize got snaps for him most of the season, where, as you say, CJ Prosize did not look like he knew what he was doing. But Travis Homer not only seemed to know what he was doing, he seemed to be quite good at doing it as well, which is something that Prosize didn't really show at any point in 2019.
Well, the Leno Hill ones, it's a really good comparative point, because I think Carroll said that Hill had been playing because of the experience, as which Blair doesn't have, and that's bullshit, really. Like, that's not the way that anything should go. That it kind of goes completely against the always compete mantra, really, because it's kind of it's putting something that Blair can't possibly have as an attribute to go against him. So I think that's a weird thing for Pete to say, but I don't know, he just kind of got into his own feelings maybe a little bit on Sunday. I thought that was weird, and if Diggs can't go on Sunday, it'll be interesting to see what they do, because there isn't really a plus point of playing Leno, I don't think, anymore.
No, he was outpaced as well. He was the one who couldn't keep up with Kenyon Drake, wasn't he?
I think he was.
Yeah, but so there's not much going right. Outside of that, DK Metcalf, Adam got close to even more Seahawks franchise records. Those Ole Miss receivers from 2018 are just wild. Him and AJ Brown, 81 yards and 6 catches, 12 targets for DK Metcalf and a touchdown. But I think DK Metcalf's season was summed up on Sunday, because the touchdown catch was impressive, and then he turned into a T-Rex on a few occasions again and missed on opportunities. Really, his body type and the role he's in currently with Tyler Lockett on the other side, he should be coming down with. It's that kind of giveth and taketh away, isn't it?
He's so weird. As you say, there was a ball, I think, like head height, that just went between his hands inexplicably. And then I think he caught one.
Literally the next touchdown.
The next play. It's just, I don't know. Like, what's the guy's seat? Is that the kind of thing that you think improves? Because, like, I was unfortunately watching Spurs yesterday, and they couldn't pass the ball 10 yards to each other. And someone said to me, well, that's the coach's job. It's not really the coach's job.
No.
If someone on $100,000 can't kick the ball in a straight line 10 yards, like, you'd imagine that at 4 years old, that's the kind of thing that would be established quite well. And like, can you coach someone to be better at catching?
Well, you'd hope so, but I mean, Mike Leach always says, and I think he's pretty spot on, that with quarterbacks, you don't teach accuracy. They're either accurate or they're not. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is clear and it is valuable. But receivers, I mean, because he clearly can catch, because the catch, it's almost like a concentration focus type deal, mm-hmm. isn't it? And maybe it's kind of like, he's still a rookie. The step up is still big, even though he's, what, 17, six, four, five, five, 6 months into his playing career. I mean, it probably is still a bit cloudy, but yeah, at this point in the season, look at AJ Brown. AJ Brown did nothing for like 6-7 weeks, and now he's probably going to win Offensive Rookie of the Year because he's just exploded and he's got like 20 yards of catch. So it's usually happens the other way, but DK Metcalf has kind of done this all season. He's had the big plays, but he also has the ones that, what the hell are you doing here?
Yeah, I mean, let's say he like stayed at this level or like within this sphere of goodness for the next 3 years, and you know, he added 15 targets and 200 yards and 3 touchdowns a game.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably what, wide receiver 2?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which wouldn't be bad going, I guess.
No, because you'd expect Lockett to match it. I mean, Lockett's got his first 1,000-yard season this year. DK got nailed on 900. So, I mean, that's near 2,000 yards from a guy who was supposedly going to fall back because Doug Baldwin had retired, and a rookie who was still there at 64th or 63rd pick in a draft who was at one point supposed to be going top 10, top 15. So, and also that was on an offense with no tight end, really. Jacob Hollister has done his job, but Will Disley was such a massive part of this offense, clearly, for the first month of the season. But yeah, it is definitely just like, it is probably being a bit, like focusing a bit too much, because as I said, we need 2,100 yards from two receivers on the team, which apparently runs the ball too much. So it is, it is something to watch, especially because those opportunities are going to get more prominent and more important over the next 2-3 weeks if the Seahawks can hang for that long, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, and like looking a bit further forward, you've got a wide receiver class that is absolutely stacked,
unbelievable,
in the draft. But and I would say that, you know, I could make a case for drafting, well, almost any position, to be honest. But if there was a great wide receiver on the board, you know, I would be, I'd have no problem with them taking a wide receiver. But it just doesn't strike me something they're going to do. Even though, yeah, I think if you look past those two guys, there's not an awful lot of depth behind them.
No, I mean. We talk about CJ Parisa. David Moore is not. I mean, he had 2 catches again, 30 yards, but his season's been somewhat, a non-factor, is he, really? I mean, he had the one long touchdown a few weeks ago against the Vikings on blown coverage, but again, he's shown a few examples of having like T-Rex arms, which is not what you'd expect coming into the season. You'd expect him to take some sort of a step forward, but he kind of has gone the other way slightly, hasn't he?
Well, I may have made the slight error of declaring after the Lions game last year that he was probably the greatest receiver in the history of the sport. So, yeah, I probably shot my bolt a little bit too early there, if we're being honest with ourselves, and maybe a touch on the hasty side. So yeah, he's got a lot to live up to if he's going to hit the heights that I declared he could. So maybe a slight error on my part there.
Yep. Elsewhere, obviously Hollister also had the big end of game plays, which they fell up just short. And there is, again, like with DK Metcalf, there is teaching opportunities. It's Pete Carroll report, because as I messaged you yesterday, watching the Rose Bowl game, it's not hard. There's a massive white line. Run towards it, then past it, and then run sideways. I mean, it is elementary, Watson, isn't it, a little bit?
A touch. Now, I need to probably watch them in more detail to see if there was physically any time to get there. Like, I'm not sure what kind of play it was, but certainly the weird one is that on the pass interference play, he kind of went much further than he needed to go in order to initiate the contact. When if he'd literally just put his foot in the ground and turned around, he probably would have had a clear touchdown over to his right shoulder. It kind of the worst of both worlds with that situation, I think, on that those last few plays of the game.
Yeah, defensively, Adam, it was gnarly. Missed tackles and everything else, executing, as we said a few weeks, it was. But they even though they give up touchdowns on the final two drives for the Niners, they did step up slightly, and it was, as you say, the old guard yet again in KJ and Bobby who made the more talented and prominent players on that defensive side, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen, or you might be able to correct me, but I can't remember a receiver give us the problems that Deebo Samuel has in the two games that we've played against him.
He's a proper problem. I mean,
he's amazing.
Unbelievable.
Can you think of a guy? I mean, obviously, like Larry Fitzgerald catches everything, but I mean, he just seems like a mismatch anywhere where he lines up against us.
The only one is probably Robert Woods, but I mean, he's doing it with a terrible quarterback, and obviously we saw him in that Bills game when he had like 250 yards or something. But I think he's the only one close who's done it more than once. I mean, OBJ did it first time. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, no, I don't think he has. The thing with Deebo is that he's a rookie. Like, it's not with Larry Fitzgerald, he's done it over a span. OBJ's done it over 2, 3, 4 years against the Seahawks. But Deebo did it from like snap one. I mean, the touchdown run, yeah, it's not great from Leno Hill and Trey Flowers tackling. But I mean, the speed he's going and that spin move is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And the fact he's going to... I mean, I text my mate who's a 49ers fan saying, is there any way you can not have Deebo Samuel for the next 10 years and George Kittle can go in that trade package to, like, I don't know, the Jets or something. Just give him anything. You add manager kind of thing on Football Manager. Just get rid of those two players for the next 10 years because they're going to be annoying.
Yeah, heartily. But you're right. I mean, the defense... I never quite understand how or why, but all of a sudden, like, teams just stop scoring points against us and we just start scoring them. Like, there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason how it happens. I mean, talk about a dumb comment to make on a podcast that's apparently supposed to have some insight. They just kind of stopped scoring and we didn't. It was weird.
Yeah, and then when we did, they started again.
Yeah, that's also true.
Yeah, but there's been some chat, Adam, from certain people on Twitter deriding Shaquille Griffin, but I mean, yeah, he didn't look great on a couple of plays, but he also was playing on one leg, Adam.
Yeah, I think Griffin he's probably his biggest issue, I would imagine, now for me is his consistency, but I don't know if that's just because he doesn't play as well as he can every week, or that sometimes he's not Richard Sherman and he has slight limitations that get shown up, as almost every cornerback does. But we were completely spoiled by having Richard Sherman for as long as we did. And so everything is kind of naturally compared against that. You know, he gives up a catch. Sherman wouldn't have done that. Yeah, Sherman was probably the best player of the decade to play in that position. So, you know, the fact that we're getting what we are out of Griffin, a third round pick, I think is great. And he gets torched every now and again. But it's an offensive league and everyone gets torched, unfortunately.
Yeah, even Richard Sherman has a few times this season as well. On the other side, Trey Flowers obviously missed the tackle on the Deebo touchdown run, but he had the big sack, which is it was that kind of first positive play for the defense, wasn't it, that sack? And it seems like, from those who have watched your 22 and posted it on Twitter and Facebook and all the rest of it, that he was somewhat guessing on that, Adam, which is in the context of the game and context how it was, if it had gone wrong and then... Yeah, he could have been hung, drawn, and quartered on Monday morning, couldn't he?
Yeah, but I guess it's quite nice when there's a little bit of randomness that goes into this over-analysed game. So I'm not going to complain too much when it'll go your way one way, it won't the next.
Yeah, there's, you know, overall, though, 6-point loss. Well, what wasn't even that, was it? 6-point loss?
I have absolutely no idea what the score was.
5-point loss, 26-21, as Pro Football Reference tells me. 26-21. There's even, despite the chance Sunday provided of being an absolute torture, and as I said, in bed by 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, there is a glimmer that if these two teams meet again, that there's not much to be scared of. Is that a dangerous thing to say? But this, I mean, as you said with the Saints, the 49ers aren't the proposition the Saints are they?
Well, I think that's the interesting part of it. You know, I think I was furious when I went to bed because I felt like I was deprived of watching what could have been one of the great Seahawk moments. And yet again, it's second and goal from the one and Lynch doesn't score for one reason or another, which just, I don't know, it's bizarre. There'll be a movie about that one day, second and goal from the one, because it's ridiculous that it's happened twice to the same guy and kind of what would have given him two of the three biggest moments maybe of his career. So anyway, enough about that. But then if you look at it, the road to the championship game maybe slightly more favorable than if we'd lost, if we'd won, sorry. I mean, I had had a Minnesota Vikings fan texting me, and she was like, come on, we want the Seahawks to win because we want to play Seattle. And I think that probably is indicative of that situation. They probably would rather we were in that position. And I don't necessarily think we're in a worse off state. And I guess, like, it was annoying because we nearly won what would have been a great game. But in a way, if we kind of just lost by 15 and just kind of laid the tools down a bit and said, on to Philadelphia, we don't know that's what's coming for us. I don't know. I feel like I would have been fine waking up Monday morning.
Yeah, it was. I mean, yeah, it was kind of those. I think the reaction to obviously delay a game late was somewhat just something to beat people up with, because people need that to get the likes and retweets on their inverted commas opinions.
I think that is an annoying play though, because
it is to
get done on clock management, and like I find Pete is especially annoying when he's trying to make excuses for his own fuck ups. Like he's got a real way of just like, we shouldn't have done that. Like kind of brushing it away in an almost joking manner. And imagine if Detroit had won.
Yeah.
And it cost us a bye. I mean, it would have been, I'm not sure I would have ever recovered. Like it just would have been carnage. And so I think that's where it's annoying, because it doesn't for a guy that preaches accountability, I don't feel like he's shown an awful lot of that in this situation. And I think people have the right to be frustrated by that, because in a way it's more kind of it could be predictive of what could happen in the future, where we are lousy with the clock, and it would be so frustrating to get done on something like that again.
But at the same time, there is, I mean, Pete Carroll, the whole thing is on three rules, and one of those things is protect the team. There's a very, very heavy chance that that is just what he's doing. He knows exactly who was at fault there, but he doesn't want to do what Jalen Ramsey did to Taylor Rapp 2 weeks ago and throw a rookie or the quarterback or the running back or the
but it's himself
shot at Limer. Yeah, but is it though? That's what I mean. I'm not so sure. I think one of the players kind of misjudged a misstep. There's no way Pete Carroll's 70 years old doesn't know that all this and that. There was a breakdown or something went skew if, and this is just him getting out in front of it and doing what he does.
So you don't think the delay game was on him particularly?
Not complete, but because I don't think it was. I think it was just, I don't know, a mashup of everything. But no, I don't think it was. I think there was someone done goofed up, and I'm not completely certain it was all on Pete. I just think his way of trotting that line out is just the easiest way to get past it while not throwing anyone or anything under the bus.
Because my worry with it is that, like, the spike happened and all of a sudden it looked like the two Ronnies on the field. Like, I mean, it was just there was no organization, there was no poise, people were running on, they're running off. There was George Fant was like half dead on the 20-yard line. Like, it was just carnage. And it was almost like they'd taken a timeout and they were waiting to see that stupid Subway NFL commercial again on Sky. And like, oh, we've got all the time. And then all of a sudden, no, it's 15 seconds to go and there's nothing going on. And I don't know, it could, like, a Belichick, I know this is a really boring comment to make, but you just can't imagine a team coached by Bill Belichick would have that same situation. Like, you would imagine they'd have another play lined up for the first or second down after Asua would catch it. And that's what I find quite frustrating.
Yeah, maybe. But I do think it was, I do think Pete Carroll's trots out that line just to protect the team and just kind of move on, because, I mean, it's Thursday and no one really is talking about it. Everyone's talking about what they're going to do on Sunday night in Philadelphia. Before we move on, anyone to point praise to, or we haven't mentioned?
Who have we not mentioned? I think everyone's got a shout-out that deserves it, don't they? I tell you what, George Fant did well, comparatively, to Jamarco Jones. Against Bosa. And I was saying this to Alistair Court during the game, that I don't know, when the line just looks like it's going to crap, I always think about that Rams game at home where Fluka went out and Jamarco Jones came in and just looked better. And my worry about, I'm going to bring this towards Sunday too quickly. My worry about Sunday is that we do the same thing as Dallas last year and we end up losing, and we lose because we forget what we're good at, and we end up losing with regret as well. And that's really going to be very frustrating after the exact same thing happened last year. And in a team that I think we're going to need to pass it more than we have done, I feel like Jamarco Jones is a better pass protector than Fluker is at right guard. And that's something that I would quite like to see on Sunday. But anyway, I'm moving on too quickly. Scold.
Okay. I think the one I'm going to put praise to is Marshawn Lynch, because, yeah, I mean, he that was just really fucking cool. I think I keep saying the fact that he's playing in 2019 and watching Marshawn Lynch play for the Seahawks, and he's been effective, and he's talking to the press, even though it's only for like 50 seconds. He's still talking. He's still providing some expletive-laden quotes to the press. Yeah, so yeah, I think Marshawn. Moving on, though, Wildcard Weekend, the final game on Wildcard Weekend, somewhat strangely, although for those of us making the trip down to Bristol Rovers on Sunday, quite welcome that it's not 9 o'clock and not 6 p.m. The Seahawks face the Eagles yet again.
Penny gets through. Rashad Penny into open field. Is he going to get there? Still on his feet. Touchdown! 58 yards for Rashad Penny.
So yeah, the Seahawks go east to Philadelphia once more. Always sunny in Philadelphia. Quotes at the ready for next week's pod, Adam. But this is a team which have had an almost alternate universe of a final month of the season. So the Seahawks have had four straight wins, and for all four of them, NFC East divisional games. And how bad, even in the context of how bad the NFC East is in 2019, to win four straight divisional games and all the added angst they bring all across the league, that is pretty impressive. And it's kind of like they've like earned their kind of seat at the table, the playoff table, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, they always look like a playoff team to me going into the season. I didn't expect it to transpire the way it has, but they're obviously full of talent, and it started to show a little bit in the last four games of the year. They probably are the team that's most injured in the league, even more than us, I think. The amount of players and stars that have gone down for them. So I think it's a good match. I think both teams will look at it and say it's a good matchup for us. And so, yeah, you know, you don't want to say that the least shit team will win on the day, because that's probably slightly disrespectful. But I do think it's going to be one of those games where fundamentals and basics and kind of just playing to the strengths of your best players are going to win it. There shouldn't be any surprises here.
Yeah, Carson Wentz is the first quarterback in NFL history to pass for more than 4,000 yards whilst having no wide receiver get more than 500 receiving yards. Alshon Jeffrey with 490 leads the non-running back tight ends receivers for Wentz. But it just proves everything. I mean, Alshon Jeffrey's missed. I think he's out. Is he out, isn't he? I think he is. Nelson Aguilar is probably out. Zach Ertz is a lacerated in kidney or something.
Imagine having Miles lacerated anything and not and like wanting to play NFL football.
Yeah. It's just unnecessary, really, isn't it?
Sounds unchilled.
And then since the Seahawks game first time around, Miles Sanders has emerged as a legitimate three down, four down running back in the NFL. And he missed practice yesterday. It might just be just get through the week and just put him out there on Sunday. Same with Ertz, I'd expect, although as you say, it's a bit wilder to expect that for Zach Ertz. But Miles Sanders is a different proposition to the one we faced 6 weeks ago, isn't he? And then he seems like more confident. He has, as Marshawn said on Sunday about his experience, and he's got his legs under him.
Yeah, well, there's Boston Scott as well, who's looked pretty good in the last few games, and there's Greg Ward at receiver. So they've just kind of found players off their practice squad that they obviously misdiagnosed their talent earlier on in the year, because they just seem to have a lot more weapons, even though they've got more injuries than they did even 4 or 5 weeks ago when we played them the last time.
Yeah, look down their receiving and running back yardage leaders and stuff, and it's just absolute names. I don't even know who half these. Where does Deonte Burnett play, Adam?
Who?
Exactly. He's only got two catches, but still. Josh Perkins, the next, another dog. Washington Husky tight end. He's made a couple of big plays down the stretch. I think he caught a touchdown on Sunday as well. But yeah, it's just they are completely ravaged of anything, especially if Ertz and Sanders don't go. But the thing, probably the biggest thing that won the game for the Seahawks 6 weeks ago, Adam, was that Wentz and the Eagles offense put the ball on the ground so often. Five turnovers for the Seahawks on 6 weeks ago. We still only win by 8 points. That is probably not going to happen that again, is it?
You would be delighted to get even half that number of turnovers, I would say, on Sunday.
Yeah.
And obviously it was Rashad Penny as well had a key influence, and he won't be there. So, it's going to be hard. As I say, the only thing that I just would be so pissed off about is if they kind of go down without swinging. That's what worries me. And the way in which we're playing, I don't know, it's kind of like, this isn't even like an analogy that really works, but the Seahawks are almost like a boxer that need to taste the canvas before they remember they can start playing.
Yeah.
It's like they need to be knocked down and realize the other guy can punch before they start punching themselves. So again, that's just something that I just can't be asked to see. That I don't want to end the first quarter with 10-3 to the Eagles and we took the ball first. Like, it's just going to be frustrating for that to happen. Like, just put a game together that's complete. You know, they've said all year about the philosophy. Well, now it's time to show it, and now it's time to put a complete game together, because again, you could wake up on Monday morning with no more games, and that would be really, really frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, it would be, but it's also probably the likeliest thing that's ever going to happen in all of the world. But on 6 weeks ago, the Seahawks, even with Rashad Penny, Russell Wilson, it was the start of his weird end of season possession, really. When he only threw for 170 odd yards in Philadelphia, conditions per Pete Carroll at his press conference yesterday suggest that it's going to be the same kind of wind and howling wind in Philadelphia on Sunday. So again, it's not the perfect recipe it could be, despite how ravaged this team is and how name lacking they are at most points, if lacerated kidneys don't heal in 3 days, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, the conditions could be a real leveler, John, as they say, with FA Cup weekend coming up. Again, that's just not going to be ideal. But it's probably going to be shitting it down in Seattle on Sunday night as well. So a game against Minnesota at home may not have made too much of a difference.
No. Offensively, Russell Wilson, I mean, they're not going to go up-tempo all game, despite people wanting that. It's just not how this team runs, is it? It's not how they've won so many games over the last decade, really. But I mean, this offense needs to come out firing and not, I mean, they're probably not going to get away. Well, they didn't get away with it on Sunday against the Niners, but they're not going to get away with it on Sunday against this Eagles team, which is kind of, everything comes off the fact that their defense is opportunistic and turns those opportunities usually into points in a flash, Adam.
Well, I mean, they played so slowly on Sunday that like up tempo felt like like a slow Rams Chiefs tempo. I mean, when your initial tempo is dead, then you've not really got anywhere to go from there apart from that's up. True. So, like, just start like a normal football team will play. Even the last drive of the game, you know, there was no hurry at all.
It was weird.
You know, they almost timed it to perfection, almost. But, yeah, I mean, there was no hurry at any stage. Just even when they were, like, two scores down, it was very odd.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier Jamarco Jones playing as a pass protector. It adds weight to the fact that their best pass rusher, Adam, is the guy inside. And Fletcher Cox is going to cause issues to Joey Hunt and Michael Oyapati, whoever plays at right guard, isn't he? He's going to be the biggest focus for that front and doing anything offensively on Sunday.
Yeah, well, I mean, as always, the line does seem like to be the biggest concern. I mean, I think three-fifths of it aren't even practicing this week, which isn't, you know, suboptimal, you'd have to say. How can you even predict what a Seahawks offensive line is going to do?
No.
You know, just God knows what they're going to throw up at us. It'll be funny either way, but just sometimes funny good, sometimes funny sad.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be an experience. I think that's kind of what this 2019 season is. But elsewhere, other than Fletcher Cox, that defense is outside of Malcolm Jenkins and maybe Brandon Graham is names who aren't that familiar to the NFL fan who only focuses really on their team, if and that team not being the Eagles, Adam. There's a lot of names again, which without much press or hype or he's going to be an issue on Sunday kind of feel to them, isn't it? But this is a defense, as I say, which gets the ball a lot, gets the quarterback pretty heavily, and comes at you quite extravagantly if the scoreboard gets in their favour, like it may do on Sunday, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, Sidney Jones, the ex-Husky, has been playing really well recently. It's going to be a horrible game to watch, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah,
it's going to be an absolute horror show.
The fact this is the last game, I don't understand why this is the last game, and if we win and the Saints win, why our West Coast game is the first one on Saturday.
Is it not 9? Oh, because there's a late game on the Saturday, isn't there?
Yeah, but it's still earlier than it really should be. Why can't you put Baltimore at the later time? But never mind. It's not going to be much fun, I don't think. I mean, yeah, I'm going to Bristol Rovers. I think that may be more enjoyable because Matthew Godden is a god. anyone to watch out for on either side of the ball on Sunday? Confidence and a prediction?
I feel like in the playoffs, like all of them, just step your game up. I'm not going to call out. I mean, look, I guess the speed at which Tyler Lockett gets his first catch will be something to look out for, because that's not happened early enough in the past few weeks. Obviously, DK, see what he can do, and maybe Malik Turner comes back again and has another crazy catch down there, which would be very tidy. I don't know if I'm confident or not. I'm going to go for a Seahawk win because it's a Seahawk podcast, but I haven't really... I can see both scenarios very easily happening in my mind, but I think I'll go 26-20 Seattle.
Yeah, I think I'll probably go there for the same reasons. But the thing is, like I said, kind of alluded to earlier, if they win this, I kind of would feel more comfortable and confident playing the Niners again than I do playing the Eagles again, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm not even certain why, but yeah.
Today feels a little bit any given Sunday to me. Sorry, Sunday does. Like, if they can win a playoff game this year, you're playing with house money the rest of the way.
Yeah.
You know, if you end up with the Niners, the Saints, and the Packers, I don't rate the Packers particularly, but if you end up in the Niners and the Saints, what could you really ask for from this team? But win this one, like that would be cool. It'd be upsetting to, you know, given where they were at 9-2 at some stage, and at some point had the first round, had the first in the NFC in their grasp. It would be a bit of a shame if it ended with zero playoff wins. And I feel like I'm surprised we even got there in the first place. I kind of want one more.
Yeah, exactly. The same for me. I think my one to watch as well would just be Travis Homer, just to see if he's not going to be like one of those one hit wonder kind of things, and if he could actually provide something moving in to 2020 whenever that takes focus on the radar. I think if we can get similar, not maybe output, but a look to how he looked against the Niners, and that will be it can only be encouraging, and yeah, it may spell the end for certain players who share the running back room with him as well. Quick spin in the bin, Adam.
As always.
Yep.
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
And Chip Kelly is an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
Yeah, a new year, a new approach, but as always, there are people who irritate our NFL watching experience to a maximum degree. Adam, aren't there?
There are, and I'm going to start with Al Riveron, the NFL. Nice. Have I done you?
Yeah, no. Let's turn this into the Pat McAfee show. This is all he does every Monday.
His explanation for the pass interference was, to be frank, fucking bollocks. Like, I don't mind if you don't think that's not pass interference. I do, but you know, Richard Sherman had an interesting point about, you know, Hollister initiated the contact and what John wanted to do. But like, you've got a rule specifically brought in to have a look at that. He said that NBC gave them a great look in between plays. Well, so they could see what they're doing. Like, you are the NFL. I'm watching NBC. Like, you should be doing this. At least stop it and have a look, because that is why you have the rule. And if you're not going to use it, then just get rid of it. And I don't mind if you do get rid of it, because it has been a bit of a farcical situation. But you would think that this is the prime point to say, we've got this rule for this exact reason, and we're just going to have three more looks at it just to check, because it, let's be honest, it's difficult to tell on one look and 15 seconds between plays. So Al Riveron, your explanation was jank, my friend.
Oh, well, that is jank. Yeah, but also I think Pete Carroll said on Monday that the office use in New York is the TV copy ones. They don't have like different cameras kind of thing. The angles and views they have is because of the broadcast, whatever the broadcast is giving them.
Sure, but presumably if you stop the game, then you get longer to look at it and you can have a look at more views from...
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I just think is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree. And yeah, Alvaro is an absolute tool of maximum proportions. So yeah, I'm just amazed it took him 17 weeks to solely be put in this fine bin. Me, I'm going to go with Dave Gettleman, somehow still the GM of the New York Giants, who's now got in charge with appointing another head coach to go 7-9 with next year. He just doesn't seem to realise how anything works. He calls the analytic guys the computer people. He said they were going to get... They're probably going to let Leonard Williams walk, and that the juice is worth the squeeze, because they'll get a compensatory pick back. They won't if they replace Leonard Williams, which is probably what they're going to do in free agency, because whatever Williams gets, they will sign someone for the matching value. He just does not seem to understand. And the fact that Ron Rivera ran to Washington instead of waiting to match back up with his old GM in Carolina, Gettleman, says more really than anything else can ever say, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and also I would say, what have Cleveland done missing out on that? I mean, Ron Rivera would have been the perfect guy for that roster.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, if the Skins have truly got rid of Bruce Allen and they have Ron Rivera, they bought Jack Del Rio, who's changed it to a 3-4, which is slightly weird when you've got...
No, I think they've gone back to 4-3.
Oh, okay. I misread that. I think that's all I've got for getting them actually this week.
I've got another one that's more of a comment to stay on my refereeing theme.
Okay,
have you ever learnt anything from Dean Blandino?
No.
Like, he must be on a shed load of money to sit there with a decent trim goatee and a decent whistle on and just say everything that any fan that's watched more than 18 minutes of football ever. Like, there's nothing ever that I've learned from him. Like, oh, yeah, that's a good point, Dean. Like, we know his foot's out. He's out of bounds. That's kind of what it means. And they, like, we've got to check in with Dino Blandino. Like, who cares? Just you, Treichman, also know the rules. You can tell me what's going on.
It is. Yeah, there probably is, like, broadcasting ways of doing that, I guess, just because... I mean, the amount of stoppages you get for rule-ins are quite boring. I guess maybe that's why they go to him. But yeah, he offers absolutely nothing. Also, the fact that ESPN seem to only hire referee consultants who agree with the on-field referee. The referee last night for the Rose Bowl agreed with everything about the ridiculous OPI call on Wisconsin late on. And then every single referee who has a Twitter account on Twitter saying, no, that's not OPI. Even like Sterator... All of them completely disagree, but ESPN seem to hire the only two people who agree with every word and every ruling the officials give. But yeah, it's annoying.
ESPN are fine hirers of people to talk about American football, as we well know from our Monday Night Football days.
Yes, hire Amin and Hasselbeck now. Please do that. I don't think I've got anyone else in the bin this week. I mean, obviously all the usuals are still in there. Colin Coward's in there because just see Colin Coward. There is a reason, but I can't remember. I can't find it on my Twitter timeline either. A good week, bad week, Adam, quickly.
Good week, bad week. Who's had a good week? I was just thinking that there was a not it's not a good week, but I heart and they've ruined it, I think, by getting rid of Dorsey, which I think is a bit silly. But I think that I praise the Browns for realizing that Freddie Kitchens had to go. Because it was just becoming ridiculous there. And it's been worthy for any team to say that we're waiting for our week 17 team game to see what we're going to do with our coach, because that is just nonsensical. Probably a good week for the Bengals overall. You know, you get the win over the Browns. They got a little bit of juice going into the offseason, and they're going to get Burrow, who just looks unbelievable, to be their quarterback. So probably a good week for the Bengals.
Yeah, I think it's also a good week for Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean,
if you put
his career in like actual context of everything, he's had a wild career.
He had one that you'd love to have. He's just balling out and having fun.
Yeah, he's danced when the touchdown or whatever it was late on. It's just amazing. But also he had all the thing with DeSean Jackson's gear last year in Tampa, which kind of made him memeable and the meme of the 2018 season. But he's also, like you said, he's having more fun than anyone could possibly have. He also had one of the best cameos in the entire run of the league, the TV show, a few years ago, which is brilliant as well. But yeah, he's had a proper good week. In fact, he went into Foxborough and beat the Patriots. I mean, I saw somewhere that there's a petition via Kansas City fans for him to ring the bell, which is their equivalent of the flag raising that Seahawks do this Sunday, next Sunday, as a thank you for getting them the bye, which is pretty class. I think it's like 10 or maybe 100,000 people have signed it to get him to do that for the Chiefs next week, which is pretty class. But yeah, Brian Fitzpatrick had a pretty good week. Bad week for anyone, Adam?
New England Patriots.
Come on, they're cooked.
I think they are. I think the Titans are
beaten. I think that may even be why they put that on the Saturday night. The primetime slot. I think that might be why they did that, because they I mean, you can say they've got no receivers. They've still got Judy Edelman, and as we said earlier, look at what the Eagles have got. Their quarterback throwing the ball too. So but still, Josh McDaniels is going to get job interviews because he's got the agent of all agents, I think, clearly at this point. I think that's everything, Adam.
I think we've done well. You got to go to work.
I have. the Seahawks. Hopefully, we'll be talking about another Seahawks game next week. You can get in touch with the podcast, all the usual means and methods. Do send in your on Twitter or Facebook posts. Not many people responded, as per always. Lol. your moment of the season, 2019 season, and the moment of the Seahawks decade is one, which is taking the decade, one pretty different moments of the same event, really, taking prominence with the decade one, obviously. But until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast minus the dog. I love
it. Thank goodness for that. Go on.
You feel me? Like, you know what I mean? I ain't dead now, fresh off the couch and hella dead, so. Your boy just want to get some legs, man. It was a great opportunity for that, you know, a good defense. So, you know, it no shortage of a challenge out there. So, at the end of the day, you feel me?
What'd you sense from the fans when you walked on?
Straight love, bro. Straight up. 12's with your boy tough. They've made your boy feel right at home.